everyone. My name is Eden Richardson, and thank you so much for joining in on today's online sermon. We hope that it blesses you and encourages you and challenges you as you listen. Please be sure to like and subscribe to our YouTube channel to stay up to date on all future online sermons as well. Thanks so much, and we look forward to seeing you here in person soon.
Before I get to the sermon today, I want to ask a favor of you. Think about someone you can invite to church with you. Go ahead and do that right now. Get a name in your mind. Someone you can invite to church. They need to be in church. They need the Lord. You can invite them. Think about that person. And in your own mind, I want you to whisper a prayer for that person right now. Pray for them by name. Go ahead and do that in your mind. Pray for them by name. Ask God to give you an opportunity this week to invite them to come with you next Sunday. Pray they will be open to it. And then this week, do that. Invite them to come with you. Thank you so much. Hey, let me see your copy of God's Word. You have it with you? Raise it up. Always bring the Bible with you to worship. Thank you so much. We are going to spend some time the next few weeks in the book of Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament. Tomorrow in our Bible reading plan, you begin reading Ecclesiastes. You'll be discussing it in your D group. So I want to spend about 4 weeks preaching from this book, a series of sermons I've titled The Search for Meaning. Many of you have probably heard the ancient story from Greek mythology that the gods were angry with Sisyphus and they cursed him to push a big stone up a hill, and every time it got to the top, it would roll back to the bottom. And his curse was to spend forever doing that. Push it up the hill, roll right back down to the bottom. And some people today use that mythological story as an analogy, if you will, for the monotonous nature, for the drudgery of life. I mean, think about it. Most of us get up in the morning, we have our routine. Do the same thing every morning. Go to work, go to school. If you're retired, you probably have a routine. You go through it that day, get back home that afternoon, that evening, and you do what you do in the evening. Go to bed, get up the next morning, do it all over again. And so life can be somewhat monotonous. It can be a drudgery, and we look for those special events that interrupt that monotonous nature of existence and add some spice to life. And a lot of times people conclude there really is no big purpose to life. There really is no ultimate meaning to our existence. The author of Ecclesiastes struggles with that question. Why are we here? What is the meaning of human life? And so we're going to look at what he says and see if we can learn some lessons about what life really means. What makes it meaningful and have purpose for us? Traditionally, we say Ecclesiastes was written by King Solomon, David's son, the second king of Israel, and there's evidence internally in the book to suggest that. But there's some debate about it. I'm one who thinks Solomon did write Ecclesiastes, and as a result, I want to use his life to illustrate the struggle he deals with in the book of Ecclesiastes. We're going to start in chapter 1 this morning. And the truth is, Ecclesiastes, and we don't read it a lot, maybe isolated verses, but when you read the whole thing, it can be a little bit pessimistic. It's not one of these books you read to feel good, okay? Because it makes you think about some deep, hard stuff. I mean, just notice what he says in chapter 1, verse 2, vanity of vanity, says the preacher or teacher or lecturer. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. That Hebrew word means at its root the idea of being a vapor or a breath. It speaks to the transient nature of things, how they are maybe hollow or empty, useless, not fulfilling. And he begins this book by saying, when I really look at life and everything in it, it just feels like it's here today and gone tomorrow and doesn't have any real eternal ultimate purpose. Verse 3. What advantage does man have in all his work which he does under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. I mean, one day everybody in this room will be dead. Other generations will take our place. And if you go down the line, two or three generations, the reality is probably none of them will even know we existed. But this old earth, if God doesn't put an end to it, if Jesus doesn't come back, will still be spinning on its axis, still be revolving around the sun. He says, when you look at all this from a strictly materialistic perspective, it makes you wonder, why? What's our reason for being, our purpose, our meaning? And he, in verse 8, talks about how wearisome, I always struggle with that word. Help me, church. Wearisome. Thank you. Everything is. Say that 10 times in a row real fast. But verse 9, look at verse 9. That which has been is that which will be. That which has been done is that which will be done. So there's nothing new under the sun. That's where this phrase comes from. Oh, we talk about all this technology is new. No, it's just new ways of doing the same old, same old. When I was a kid, we had party line telephones in the house. Okay? You go back in history far enough, how did they get the news? How did they talk to people? They actually went and visited somebody, wrote a letter. Monisa and I have a box of love letters we wrote when we were dating because it was too expensive to call long distance. Used to go to the village square to catch up on the latest news. There used to be this thing everybody read every day called a newspaper. This is not, it's new technology, but it's just new ways of doing what people have always done. I mean, life today is like it was 2,000 years ago. Different clothes, different technology, but life is life. And there's nothing new. In any sense, when I look at that, why are we here? Verse 11. There's no remembrance of earlier things, also the later things which will occur. There will be for them no remembrance among those who will come later still. Do you think my grandkids are going to know about my grandfather? Probably not. And even if I tell them something, they're not going to remember it in all likelihood. So where do you find meaning in life? I mean, he's asking questions that are important to all of us. And Solomon, he goes on in the book of Ecclesiastes to tell us during some days of struggle, some dark days in his life, where he looked for meaning and how all that he did and even the advantages he gained in those different areas, how ultimately they did not satisfy. Ultimately, they did not give him deep, deep meaning to his existence. And therefore, he wasted a lot of years. I've actually titled the first sermon in this series on the search for meaning as The Wasted Years. And you think about Solomon, most people just know, well, he was the wisest man that ever lived. He had to have done it well all of his life, but the truth is he didn't. He didn't. He's living proof, you could say, that being wise and being smart does not mean you always make right decisions. It takes more than wisdom to do the right thing, to be happy. Now, he started out great as a young man, as a new king. In fact, before his father, King David, died, knowing that Solomon was ascending to the throne, he gave him a charge. And here's what his father said to him as a young man about to become king. He said, keep the charge of the Lord your God to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes, commandments, ordinances, testimonies, according to what is written in the law of Moses, that you may succeed in all that you do and wherever you turn. So you can have a blessed life, keep the charge of the Lord, walk in obedience, obey, keep his commandments, etc. And for a while, as a young man, Solomon did that. Excuse me. The book of 1 Kings tells us about Solomon as asleep one night, and he had a dream, and in that dream, God appeared to him. And God said, Solomon, tell me what you wish for me to give you. What do you want? And Solomon answered God, said, what I want is wisdom. Not just wisdom. I think this is really insightful. He said, I want an understanding heart. So that when I make decisions as king, I can make decisions that are good and beneficial for my people. That's a good start. That's an admirable man. He built the temple in Jerusalem where the Jewish people worshiped their first temple. He built several palaces and other buildings. He became wealthy. The nation of Israel during his reign became for that region pretty prosperous. He was able to militarily expand their borders, enlarge their territory, make their military stronger, the country stronger. But then Solomon did what a lot of young adults do. He started drifting. And it started with small sins that later became bigger sins. And by the time you get to his midlife and beyond, he's drifted pretty far from God. And he's abusing his people, taxing them at a rate that just frustrates them to no end. He actually forces certain people groups into slavery to conduct his building projects like the Egyptians had done centuries before. Kings tells us that he married a lot of women. Now, I don't mean two or three, four or five. I mean a lot. Hundreds. And he had hundreds of concubines, meaning he had a problem, guys. He was addicted. He had a problem. And he married these foreign women from nations that God had told the Jewish people, don't marry women from those countries because they will cause you to leave the God of Israel and begin worshiping their idols. And I want you to look at this verse from 1 Kings chapter 11 about Solomon's wives. It says that his wives turned his heart away from other gods. And his heart was not wholly devoted to the Lord. Now think about this. The man who built the Jewish temple, who was the wisest man on the planet, gradually drifted from the Lord. Now, he never totally gave up on the God of Israel. He would still go to the temple and stuff, but he wanted to live with his feet in both worlds. And he built places of worship that were called high places where people could worship all these pagan gods that his wives worshiped. And he would go there and burn incense and worship those gods and also sometimes go to the temple. Of course, you know, Jesus said something about trying to love both. You can't do it. Not really. He doesn't accept that. But that's where Solomon ended up. And it's in these dark days that God became angry with Solomon. And the book of Ecclesiastes, I think, is him coming out on the other side at the very end of his existence, realizing that he had wasted all those years. And he writes Ecclesiastes to describe for us his struggle. His journey. And so for the next 3 or 4 weeks, we're going to look at that. Learn some things. But I want to begin today by sharing with you the areas where he saw purpose and meaning in life other than God. And let's just be honest, it happens to a lot of us at different seasons in life. You grow up in church, you're a teenager, you're a young adult, and you love Jesus, and then the drudgery of life starts taking over, and the next thing you know, you're distracted, and then there's little sins that get bigger. And your heart becomes less devoted to Jesus and less devoted to the church and less devoted to the Word of God and less devoted to obeying God. And you wake up one day and you realize you've been trying to find happiness and meaning in these different areas. And Jesus is kind of, well, he's over here, but he's just kind of over here on the back burner. The Solomon story is not unlike a lot of our stories. And let me share with you four places he looked for meaning away from God. The first one you would expect, wisdom, intelligence, knowledge. I mean, he wanted to be wise. He wanted to be intelligent, and God blessed him with that. And notice what he says in chapter 1, starting at verse 16. I said to myself, behold, I have magnified and increased wisdom more than all who were over Jerusalem before me. More wisdom than my father David. More wisdom than the pagan rulers of Jerusalem before my father David conquered the city and made it the capital of the nation. My mind, he says in verse 16, has observed a wealth of wisdom and knowledge. Not only do I have the wisdom God has given me, but I have observed, I have studied, I've looked at the wisdom literature of the other nations. And I know a lot. I learned a lot. Verse 17, I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I wanted to understand what was foolish and not wise. And I realized that also this also is striving after the wind. Verse 18, because in much wisdom there is much grief and increasing knowledge results in increasing pain. Have you ever heard someone say ignorance is bliss? See, sometimes the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. Sometimes the more questions you have answered, the more questions you have. And what Solomon learned, and he teaches us in the book of Ecclesiastes, is there is a limit to what you can know, what you can understand. And if you're going to find meaning in having answers to everything, you're never going to have meaning because you will never have answers to everything. No human being will ever know everything. We may make advances only to learn there is still more we don't know or understand. In Ecclesiastes chapter 8, you see here on the screen, verses 16 and 17, when he said, I gave my heart to know wisdom, understand everything going on in life. I tried to figure it all out, what God is doing, all this stuff. And I discovered that even though man should seek laboriously, work hard at learning stuff, he will not discover. And even though the wise man should say, I know, he cannot discover. There will always be stuff you don't know. Why? Because you're not God. You're created in the image of God, but you're not God. And we only use a small portion of our brain, but our human brain cannot comprehend all that is true of God or of life, of existence, and of the universe. Now, there are advantages to being wise. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 13 and 14, he says, and I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. In other words, it's better to be smart than dumb. Verse 14, a wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Yeah, you'll make better decisions in the light when you're wise. And yet I know that one fate befalls them all. No matter how smart you are or are not, every one of us will end up in the same place, dead. There's a scientific magazine called New Scientist. About 7-8 years ago, they had an article that focused on asking philosophical questions and answering them from a strictly scientific perspective. One of the philosophical questions they asked was, what is the meaning of life? What is the meaning of life? The answer they gave in this scientific magazine from a strictly scientific point of view was this: the meaning of life. Here's their answer. The harsh answer is, it has none. Your life may feel like a big deal to you, but it's actually a random blip of matter and energy in an uncaring and impersonal universe. Boy, that'll make you feel happy. The article went on to say, when it ends, when your life ends, a few people will remember you for a while, but they will die too. And even if you make the history books, your contribution will soon be forgotten. Looking to the future, they said, humans will go extinct. The earth and sun will be destroyed. Eventually, the universe itself will end. Against this appalling reality, how can a human life have any real meaning? What the scientists are saying is what Solomon discovered almost 3,000 years ago. If you look at life strictly from a materialistic perspective, And you become really smart, really bright, and you understand more about the universe. In the end, it's not going to make you happy. Because if all you have is a materialistic view, then you're nothing more than a grain of sand on the beach. And that is not very meaningful. The second place Solomon looked was, I'll just have a lot of fun. Enjoy pleasures. I'll be self-indulgent. Chapter 2, verse 1, he said, I said to myself, come now, and I will test you with pleasure. So enjoy yourself. And behold, it too was futility. He goes on in that chapter to talk about how he enlarged his works. He built these homes. Now, multiple homes. You know, it's like us. We'd say, I have a mountain home, a beach home, a vacation home, home. I've got a home in Europe. I've got a home, you know, in Florida. I got a home in the mountains of the Rockies. I'm Jay Leno. I've got a garage with thousands of cars. And he goes on talking about all this stuff. I built all these gardens and all these luxuries, and I had slaves to wait on me hand and foot. He even mentions in down there about verse 8 or so on that he had all these concubines. I mean, he indulged his pleasure. And had wealth and silver and gold and crops and flocks in verse 7. And then verse 10, he said, All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. If I saw something, I wanted it, I got it. Self-indulgent. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. Verse 11, thus I considered all my activities. I looked back at all that I did, and behold, all of it was vanity and striving after wind, and there was no profit under the sun. Wow. How many of you like that new car smell? I get my car washed. They ask, what scent do you want? And it will always be either vanilla or new car. Don't you wish that new car smell lasted? But you see, that's how pleasure is. It is pleasurable. The Bible even says that for a season. And then it's not, and you got to have another experience. And then you have to have another experience. How do you think addictions happen? And then people who are, you know, man, they're thrill seekers, and the next thrill has to be a bigger thrill than the one before, because it may be okay for the moment, but it doesn't last. And Solomon said, if you're going to find meaning in life by having fun all the time, good luck with that, because it's not going to work. The third place he looked for meaning in life was his career. You know, work, success, accomplishments. He talked about it in chapter 2, verses 18 and 19. He said, I hated all the fruit of my labor for which I labored under the sun, for I must leave it to the man who will come after me. You build a company, you build a practice, you guess what? When you die, it stays behind. In verse 19, who knows whether he, the one who gets your business after you, your house after you, who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool? Yet I have no control I have no control over the fruit of my lips. When I'm dead, I have no control, no say over what happens to what I spent my life creating and building. And you're going to have your meaning and life in something that you completely leave behind and may be destroyed by another? Verse 22, what does a man get in all his labor and his striving with which he labors under the sun? Verse 23, because all his days his task is painful and grievous, even at night his mind does not rest. This too is vanity. I mean, how many of you are like me? You have a hard time turning it off when you go to bed. Wow. And you put in those 60-hour weeks. Nothing wrong with working hard and being successful. But what Solomon says, this successful king, when I lay down at night, wow, that's not where I find meaning and joy in life. And the fourth and final place he searched for it, other than God, is having a lot of money, being wealthy. In chapter 5, verse 10, he said, he who loves money will not be satisfied with his money, nor will he who loves the abundance with his income. This too is vanity. And drop on down to verse 15. As he had come naked from his mother's womb, so will he return as he came. He will take nothing from the fruit of his labor that he can carry in his hand. They may bury you with a nice suit when they put you in that casket, but you don't take anything you accumulated, anything you created, anything you achieved with you into the next life. And you're going to find meaning in things that perish, in things that are just a blip on the calendar of eternity. Verse 16 said, this is a grievous evil. Just the way you're born, that's how you'll die. Look in chapter 7, verses 11 and 12. He said, wisdom along with an inheritance is good. It's an advantage. It protects, just like money does. Are there advantages to having money? Absolutely. Are there advantages to being wise? Absolutely. But you know something? Just like Sisyphus pushing that rock up the hill, it's going to roll back down. The cells of your body are going to age. Like Steve White said earlier, your hair will turn silver or white or let go. You're going to have wrinkles. Your bones will ache. Your energy will diminish. You will die. You can have fun every day. You can be the richest person, the smartest person, successful person. But that is the reality of everyone. And Solomon concluded, after trying it for a long time, that's not where you find meaning in life. You remember Jesus told a parable about a very successful farmer, a wealthy man whose crops produced large bumper crops, more than he'd ever produced before, and so much that he couldn't store it all in his barns. And rather than being generous and giving the extra away, he said, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to tear down all my barns, build new, bigger barns, and I'll keep it all, hoard it all, store it all for myself, and I'll have plenty for the future. And then I can say to myself, oh, you've got a lot. Take it easy. Eat, drink, be merry, have fun. And then God said to that man, you fool, this very night, your soul will be required of you. You're going to die tonight. And then who will have all this stuff you spent your whole life getting? And by the way, before you say my kids, whatever you leave your kids, if you're the average family, in 2 years, it's gone. And you spent your whole life trying to save up so you can give them, and in 2 years, it's gone on average? Is that where you find meaning? Is that where we find purpose? After telling that parable, Jesus made application and he said, so is the man. Everyone, you're like that farmer that God called a fool. Every man is like that man who stores up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. And there are going to be a lot of really smart people in hell. A lot of really successful, wealthy people who are spiritually bankrupt and have nothing in heaven. So what is the meaning of life? Now, we're going to look at it in more detail from Ecclesiastes the next 2 or 3 weeks. But for today's purpose, I want to take you back to where we started. That charge David gave to his son, Solomon. Keep the charge of the Lord your God to walk in his ways, keep or obey his statutes, commandments, etc. I wanted to look that up in the Hebrew, and so I did. When it says keep the charge of the Lord, it's interesting, that word charge really is the idea of being a night watchman, standing guard to see that something important is not stolen. And what he's saying here is you need to keep guard on your life and on your heart and on your mind. You need to be like a night watchman guarding yourself so that other philosophies and other people and so on don't come in and tempt you to like Solomon did as a young man, drift from that. You need to guard yourself because you're the only one that can protect your heart, the only one that can protect your mind, the only one that can protect your life from all of these subtle influences that try to get you to say, hey, look over here. Look at me. Look at this. That's where you'll find meaning and joy. See, the heart is sinful and foolish at times and easily misled. When we make decisions primarily with our emotions, we are at great risk. And that's how our culture functions. He says, guard your heart, guard your life, stand guard so that you make certain you keep walking with the Lord. Solomon, you know what? And Solomon tells us this at the end of Ecclesiastes, the last few verses in it. He finally, after wasting all those years, realized that meaning was found where he started, and he should have never left that starting point. But in his young adult years, like so many young adults, he drifted from there only to waste all those years and then get to the end and say, wow, man, my daddy was right. If I had just done what he said, I would not have wasted all these years. The Roman philosopher Seneca, why don't you listen to what he said? Long, long time ago. It is not that we have a short time to live, but that we waste a lot of it. Life is long enough, and a sufficiently generous amount has been given to us for the highest achievement if it were all well invested. But when it's wasted and heedless luxury and spent on no good activity, we are forced at last by death's final constraint to realize that it has passed away before we knew it was passing. That old Roman was pretty smart. Are you wasting your years? Like that old country song, looking for love in all the wrong places? You know, that other country song, wasted days and wasted nights. Do you know what your life is? It's the days and years God gives you. Why will you waste them? I think Solomon is an example that you can be really smart and waste your life. Or at least a good portion of it. And God doesn't want you to do that. In fact, Jesus said, if you lose your life, if you give it up for my sake, for my kingdom's sake, he said, you will discover it. That's where you find it. We'll talk one week about having fun because there's nothing wrong with having fun. There's nothing wrong with being successful. There's nothing wrong with having money. Unless those things become your life and your identity. And Jesus kind of gets pushed to the edge. But you see, when you keep your heart devoted to Him, you have fun, but you have joy from another place. You have money, but you don't use it just for yourself. You have skills and talents, but you expand the kingdom by using them for God's glory. And your meaning, listen, your meaning in life is only discovered when you live with eternity in mind. Because if you don't live with eternity in mind, all you have is what the scientists talk about, this materialistic world. And I got to tell you, that's pretty pessimistic. God created you in His image, meaning there is more for you than that way of living. And that's where you find your meaning in life.